small firm entrepreneur architects. Get ready to build a better business with the Entree Architect podcast, where business meets architecture. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, the host of Entree Architect podcast. Join me every week for inspiring interviews with passionate people that share proven strategies to help you build a better business.
If you think there is a problem, one, you can't make a move until you have a plan in place. The accountability chart really helps plan, okay, for the business 6 to 12 months out, this is what we need.
We cover it all, from financial management to marketing, sales, productivity, and beyond.
There's two sides of it, right? So there's the one when you don't have any work. So you're like, well, I'm either going to charge enough to be profitable or I'm going to go out of business. Or you have so much work and you have backlog and you don't need any more work. So you charge way more.
I'd also say lagging measures, one of the best, like the best. So for any client, for any professional service company, if you're going to take one thing away from what we're talking about today, is to look at a number called the labor efficiency ratio.
Entree Architect is not just a podcast. It's your secret weapon for success. With over 500 episodes, it's one of the longest running architecture podcasts in the world. You're sure to find the information you need to elevate your business. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now and join the community of small firm entrepreneur architects building better businesses.
Until she finally received patent number 3,200,177 on July 14, 1885.
I don't think you said that number right. I think you said 300,200, like 3,200.
No! I was so proud. I have a hard time saying big words and big numbers.
322,000.
Welcome to Season 9 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time. This season's theme is tools and inventions. We will be talking about ladies that invented something or were involved in the development of a tool used in our field.
Yes, We are very excited to see all of the things that our ladies invented.
Oh, yeah. We briefly mentioned it during our wrap-up episode, but it's going to be really interesting where our ladies will line up regarding patents. I mean, I'm not sure if every woman we talk about will have a patent, but to those that do, I wonder if it'll be like an ongoing theme, like to see how many patents our ladies will rack up.
That's so true. We should keep count.
Ooh, should we make it a competition? Like, whichever one of us has the most patents at the end gets bragging rights?
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, let's keep count and share the results during our wrap-up.
A bit of competition. We shall see who comes out on top.
On top.
All right. This season just became a little bit more exciting. Mm-hmm. But before we begin the competition, we have to say thank you to everyone that continues learning with us. Thank you for joining us again and for your support.
Yes, thank you, listeners.
Let's do this. Today, we will be discussing Sarah E. Good, the person who patented the cabinet bed, the precursor to the famous Murphy bed. I'm Nurjiri Rivas. At the moment of this recording, I'm celebrating She Builds Podcasts' third year anniversary by eating sushi in Houston, Texas.
Hi, I'm Jessica Rogers, celebrating our She Builds podcast anniversary. After recording this, I will be going to Daytona Beach tomorrow, and I'm based out of Miami, Florida.
Hey there, I'm Lizzie Rahr, and I'm celebrating our anniversary by floating the Russian River tomorrow in San Francisco, California.
All right, so a quick disclaimer. The three of us are not historians, nor are we experts on this subject. We are just sharing stories about the information that we find. So if we get our facts a little mixed up, please forgive us, send us a comment, and we will all continue learning.
This season, we're going to be discussing a lot of ladies and their patents. So I think it would be a good idea to do a quick little deep dive into patents.
oxymoron. Quick little deep dive. I love it.
It's subjective.
Yes.
Well, personally, I knew very little about patents before this season started, so I wanted to learn a little more. Like, what exactly is a patent and what all is involved in getting it? I don't know, but I'm about to find out.
That's right. I'm also really intrigued to hear about it. And I think it'll give us a better idea of what our ladies had to go through in order to get these patents, right? It's not like you just say, hey, by the way, I want to patent this. And they're like, sure thing.
Here you go. Yeah. Fill out this form.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because, yeah, sure. I think we all have an idea about it in passing. Like, you know, the idea of patenting. Oh, my God, this is going to be so hard this season with that word. but you want to patent something. So no one takes credit for it. Like, that's as far as I get. Like, I'm going to claim it so that no one can say that they did it. So actually learning about this and the process, it's going to be nice to know for ourselves and for our future selves if we ever want to invent something. So,
yeah,
there you go.
Let's start with, what is a patent? A patent is a type of intellectual property that gives its owner the legal right to exclude others from making, using, or selling an invention for a limited period of time in exchange for publishing the invention. So it's basically a right given to people that invent something new and useful. It doesn't automatically give people the right to sell their invention, but it stops others from being able to sell that invention.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Now, if we take it a step back further, the word patent comes from the Latin word patere, yes, which means to lay open. So in other words, to let anyone see what your patent is all about. There used to be all sorts of patents, like land patents, which we now know them as deeds, or printing patents, which we know them today as copyrights.
Right. So today you can't patent a business name. That would be a trademark. And you can't patent a book, a play, or a song. You get a copyright for those.
Mm-hmm. Patents are for physical things that you can use. And the first patents as we know them today started in Venice in the 1400s, but supposedly they were inspired by a system in Jerusalem.
Well, the U.S. passed the first Patent Act on April 10th, 1790, and it was called an Act to Promote the Progress of Useful Arts. What a title. Wow. Well, so the first patent that was filed under this new act was approved on July 31st, 1790. It was filed by Samuel Hopkins of Vermont for a method of producing potash. What is potash?
It sounds like the name of hash brown before it became hash brown.
It's like when someone doesn't know to call it a hash brown, but it's like, it's a hash, but it's a potato.
Potash.
Potash.
Well, it is,
okay, what is
nothing
it,
to do with potatoes.
Oh, no.
That sounds like a missed opportunity there.
It's potassium carbonate, which, and apparently potash is used in fertilizers a lot, but it's also a low sodium alternative for baking soda, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, so that was the first patent.
Baking soda.
Our version is way cooler. Sorry.
Okay. How can one patent a hash brown, though? Like,
I bet you McDonald's got something on their little hash brown, just saying.
Don't fault it.
Okay.
Well, in 1793, the Patent Act was revised, and then it happened again in 1836, and it got really overhauled in that second revision. So the 1836 version, they implemented a much more intensive application process. And from 1790 to 1836, there were 10,000 patents granted. And from 1836 to the American Civil War, around 80,000 patents were granted. So they implemented a more intensive application process, but people were patenting like left and right, it sounds like. Mm-hmm.
It didn't stop them. Let's talk about the steps of getting a patent for all the listeners that are curious about this just as much as we are.
Okay, so first you have to search the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to make sure that your idea hasn't been patented. Ain't nobody got time to work on something somebody already done did.
Mm-hmm. No way.
Yeah. And it would probably be a good idea to find a patent attorney to guide you through the process. Then, you know, you can figure out what type of patent you need because there are different kinds, like a utility, a design, or a plant patent. And each of them have their own process.
Once you know what type of patent you want to get, then you want to file a provisional patent application in case someone later says that they had the idea before you did. Because U.S. patent law is a first to file system, not a first to invent. That's important to remember. Mm-hmm. You can file your application by mail, but nowadays it's the 20th century, y'all. It's easier to go to USPTO website and file online.
Bam.
It's the 21st century, though. Do we care?
It is the 21st century. It was the 20th century last century. It was a test if you're paying attention. And
clearly, I wasn't. Because I was like, yeah, you go to the 20th century.
She's like, yeah, it is. All right. So then you start the formal application. You have to include a specification, which includes an abstract, background, summary, detailed description, and your conclusion, including the ramifications and scope of your patent. This generally takes 1 to 3 years to process a patent application. Good luck.
You know, I will say, though, like, that's a long process. It's longer than I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Worldwide, the number of patents being filed has been slowly increasing, but in technologically advanced countries like France, Japan, Spain, the UK, and us, it's been actually going down. There's a few ideas about why this might be. Some people think it's because humans have been reaching their brain limits, which I think that's the funniest and saddest reason out of all of them.
Okay, so I've never heard of someone reaching brain limits before, but I've heard this kind of conversation come up because it reminds me about when people talk about originality, because everything feel, I say this in quotes, feels like it's been done. I think that's what people feel, or like that's why they might not patent things. Mm-hmm. But to me, it sounds like it's like a lack of inspiration, a lack of curiosity, and the determination, because sure, they have a good idea, but once they hear it takes 1 to 3 years, they're like, forget about it. But
maybe.
But okay, let's go back into the history and the barriers to getting patents before we knew that it took 1 to 3 years. And let's talk specifically about the patent laws in the U.S. and the several barriers that African Americans faced when applying for patents. So way back when, slave owners would allow those that they enslaved to apply for patents, but the slave owners still held ownership of the patent process and, of course, the patent profits. For those that were free, for those that were enslaved that were free, they didn't have any obstacles to secure their patents. However, in 1857, the U.S. Supreme Court ruling, also known as the Dred Scott decision, declared that enslaved people were not citizens of the United States, and therefore they couldn't vote, hold office, or obtain patents. This also includes things like owning said patents or property, aka land patents, aka deeds. So, after the Civil War, African Americans were recognized as citizens and were again able to secure patents.
So for women in the U.S., historically, they were precluded from obtaining patents also. Even though in Section 1 of the 1790 Patent Act, it does include the term she, but at this time, married women couldn't own property under their own name. They also didn't have any rights to income that they made, including income from things they invented. Which is bananas, but it's how the world worked at that time. Mm-hmm. Over the next few hundred years, the gender gap has shrunk, but it's definitely still a thing. In the UK, only 8% of inventors were female as of 2015. We can attribute this to the historical barriers we mentioned before, but also that women are underrepresented in what we'd consider, quote, patent-intensive professions such as STEM. There's also talk that this gender gap within patents is also because of an internal bias in the patent system.
Yep. This is good that we could provide a history lesson on patents. In the last wrap-up, it was astonishing to know some of these statistics that we talked about in the wrap-up. But now that we have this context set in place, I'm so excited for this season. I believe all of our ladies would have patented something now in hindsight. So to know the process and the barriers set before them, ooh, I got goosebumps. Like, gotta roll my sleeves down. Like, it's got chills.
This feels like a good place to start our story about Sarah E. Good. What do you think?
Okay.
Let's do this.
The time was 1850 or 1855. The place, Toledo, Ohio. Sarah Elizabeth Jacobs was born. Her parents were Oliver Jacobs, a waiter and carpenter, and Harriet Jacobs, organizer of the Ohio Anti-Slave Society in Toledo, which also happened to be a stop on the Underground Railroad.
Yay! So awesome.
Sarah was born into slavery, but in 1863, the Emancipation Proclamation happened and Sarah was free. Eventually, her family moved to Chicago, Illinois. There, she met and married Archibald Good, a stair builder and upholsterer. They had all girls, Estella, Insa, Harriet, Edna, and Sarah.
Wow, that's a lot of girls. Also, a stair builder is so specific. Like, did he have a stair specialty? Like a certain type?
Ooh, like a spiral staircase?
Or maybe right. He knew all of them and maybe. Did them all well.
I'm very intrigued.
Yeah. Also, I think it's cute that they had all girls and all of their girl names, Stella, Edna.
Cute. By the 1880s, Sarah and Archibald opened a furniture store together in Chicago. They were in a city, right? So lots of apartments with little space. A lot of their customers needed small, multifunctional furniture. Some of their clients would also complain that they didn't even have enough space to fit a bed and storage space. So this inspired Sarah to build a foldable bed that could fold into a cabinet or roll-top desk with space for storing papers and writing tools.
Genius. Living in a city and trying to maximize space, I can definitely see how this would be a huge game changer.
Oh, yeah.
Sarah was able to get the weight of the bed just right so that it could easily be folded, but then also have enough counterweight for it to be supported from the center and for it to stay open when it got unfolded.
Yeah, that would be critical because you don't want it to fling back or get folded up inside of it like a cartoon. That's what I'm like imagining. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, why yes. Why do I picture that so vividly?
Right?
Because we've seen it.
Yep. In cartoons. Memory unlocked.
She knew she had a revolutionary invention on her hands. So she followed one of our advice from before. She hired the attorney, George P. Barton, to help her file the paperwork for a patent. And they went for it in November 1883.
Nice. I'm glad she was proactive and got legal help.
Yeah. I hope this turns out well.
The whole process was $35 in fees and almost 2 years of waiting, getting rejected, revising her application, and resubmitting until she finally received patent number 322,177 on July 14, 1885. This made her one of the first Black women to receive a patent in the U.S.
Yay! Way to go, Sarah.
Yes!
Ladies, this was the precursor to the famous Murphy bed. In theory, I think Murphy beds are so cool. I've always wanted one. So to learn that Sarah's invention was one of the stepping stones towards the Murphy bed was really neat.
It is really neat. I think they're cool.
I know, right? And it's really cool to find out that a woman invented the bed that would inspire the Murphy bed, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Sarah was invited to exhibit her flat folding bed at the 32nd Annual Illinois State Fair, and she was part of a Chicago Tribune article from September 1884 about the event.
Amazing. So glad that her invention got recognized at that time.
Yeah, it must have been a really big deal.
Yeah,
I bet. By 1885, Sarah and her husband had a furniture store at 513 State Street in Chicago. The building where the store was located was the Bennett Medical College of Eclectic Medicine and Surgery. I just really wanted to say that because it sounds like such a random piece of info.
It's so random. But like, I have questions. Was the store in the College of Medicine, or like the school owns the building and they rent a space for them? I was like, I had this image of a doctor's office and then you walk into the waiting room and there's also a furniture store there, like kill two birds with one stone kind of thing.
That is actually a really good idea.
Right? Like,
sometimes you're waiting at the doctor's office for so long, you would probably buy a piece of furniture.
Exactly. And then like the furniture that you wait on could be for sale. Like,
well, going back to Lizzie's question, the goods rented space from the college. So Sarah was the tenant and the college was the landlord.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Okay.
Y'all, Sarah also got invited to the Paris Exposition of 1900 to be a part of the exhibit of American Negroes organized by W.E.B. Du Bois, Thomas J. Calloway, and Henry E. Baker. I could not find more information on how many people were a part of the exhibition, but she was one of four Black women that were being featured. The exhibition ran from April to November 1900, and more than 50 million people saw it.
Wow.
And this lives on to this day. The exhibit of American Negroes is housed at the Library of Congress. So Sarah's work should be there, just hanging out, being cool.
Wow, that is amazing. I'm so glad that she was able to go and that her work is still being showcased to this day, as it should
yes.
be.
Yes.
I mean, this is
epic. I mean, it's so okay. We briefly talked about W.E.B. Du Bois in episode 32 when we talked about Amasa and her time in New York. And when we talk about that, we talk about this whole thing about W.E.B. Du Bois. But it's great to know that Sarah's work was recognized and that she was able to travel outside of the U.S. and that it still lives on at the Library of Congress. Like, that is so good. That's so amazing.
Mm-hmm. 5 years after going to Paris, Sarah passed away in Chicago on April 18, 1905, and is buried at Graceland Cemetery, which is a large historic cemetery in Chicago.
She wasn't that old. That's really sad. Mm-hmm. I wonder what other amazing things she could have come up with. But I'm really glad, again, that her invention was recognized while she was still alive to enjoy it, right?
Yes. So, yeah, she was in her 50s. We didn't get an exact year for her birth, but she would have been in her 50s. But that's not old at all. So, yeah. But Lizzie, like you said, her work was known worldwide. So also knowing the history about patents that we gave at the beginning of the episode, it gives everything that she was able to accomplish so much weight, you know, like she was able to do mm-hmm. it despite all the odds.
True. And Sarah has a few posthumous recognitions. For starters, in 2001, the state of Virginia established February 25th as African American Scientists and Inventors Day. And Sarah was mentioned in the inauguration.
Lovely.
As she should be.
Mm-hmm. Then she was honored in 2012 when the City of Chicago public school system opened the Sarah E. Good STEM Academy. The high school is a Pathways in Technology, aka P-Tech school. They find high school students internships in the fields of their choice and also offer courses that count towards college credits for the students.
Oh, I love this. Hopefully the students who attend the school learn about the namesake of the school and her amazing accomplishments.
Also, this program sounds really cool.
Yeah, we could have benefited from something like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also a children's book by Vivian Kirkfield about Sarah and her invention. It's called Sweet Dreams, Sarah, and it was published in 2019.
Cute.
That's so cute. I need to look it up.
Yeah, we need to get this book for all our children, for all our friends with children.
Yeah,
for our children friends.
Our children.
All the children
friends.
That we know.
Of the future. Well, ladies, it's time for our caryatid.
A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we present a caryatid, a woman who's working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode.
Drum roll, please. Nada Debs! Nada Debs is extra special because not only is she an amazing furniture designer, she is a listener suggestion. Thank you very much to Yasmin Bulwam for nominating Nada for us today.
Yay! We love a listener suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do. Keep them coming. Nada is a Lebanese designer who grew up in Japan and studied design at the Rhode Island School of Design in the United States. Today, she runs her design firm in Beirut, and similar to Sara, Nada also has a store. Y'all, we can shop her products and furniture online today.
So fun. I can't wait to check it out.
Yes.
Also, just like Sara, Nada listens to her clients and creates pieces that are beyond form and following function. They answer the client's needs and resonate with the culture and emotions of the users. She's impressive, y'all. She has an experiential collaboration with Kohler for Design Miami. I'll put a link to that on the show notes so that y'all can learn all about it.
Amazing. I'm looking forward to checking out that link.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was looking at it pretty fast. So I don't know if it's still physically somewhere that you could check out, Jessica.
Yeah. So Design Miami is basically an event, but it's open, I think, all year round now. But it's where all these like furniture and like product designers showcase their work. It's like a really cool place. I used to go a lot when I was in high school. But I want to know about this and I want to see if I can see it in person. That'd be so cool.
And take pictures.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Or did happen. Adventure.
Yeah.
Before we leave today, we have an agora.
Wee, wee, wee.
Wee.
All right, y'all. So in Greek society, the agora was the central meeting place of the city where news was shared. So now we are going to share some good news and have y'all share the excitement and wins with us.
Today, we're celebrating births. First, congratulations to Kelly B for giving birth to her second child, Riley. And secondly, congratulations to Jose G for the birth of his first child, Joaquin.
Yay! Congrats.
Babies everywhere. So listeners, let's continue to share great news from you. If you have news to share, big or small, please send them to our email, shebuildspodcast@gmail.com. Let's celebrate your accomplishments together.
Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical producer, and most of all, muchas gracias to all of you for listening. We also want to give a special shout out to the website Black Past for all the information they share about Sarah E. Good.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope that you enjoyed learning about Sarah and Nada along with our banter, and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies. Again, thank you.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLMedia.com.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your furniture designers, your Murphy bed users. Tell them all. Tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about women bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebosspodcast@gmail.com, leave a comment on our website, shebosspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebosspodcast and on Twitter at shebosspod. Hasta luego!
Bye.
Worldwide, the number of patents being filed has been slowly increasing, but in technology advanced countries like France, Japan, Spain, the UK, and us, it's been actually going down.
Technologically?
Yeah, should I? I didn't want to say first world countries.
Well, I know, but you just said technological advance. Like, you didn't say technologically.
It wasn't the term. It was how you said it.
It wasn't the term. It was the, it was like you.
Technologically?
Yes.
Are you NCARB certified yet? Join the network of over 45,000 architects who have the NCARB certificate to expand your professional reach.
By becoming NCARB certified, like I did, you are demonstrating that you've met the national standards for licensure, a qualification that can be an important factor for firms when hiring and promoting. Certificate holders have a streamlined path to apply for a reciprocal license in all 55 U.S. jurisdictions, as well as access to an extensive library of free continuing education courses.
Learn more at ncarb.org.